I got to a point where people were asking me to be a life coach.
This kind of gave me the hint that when you create a podcast, people think you are an expert in that field.
Jody Krangle is the voice behind major brands like Dell, Nespresso, and HGTV, who turned her passion for sound into a thriving voiceover empire.
After 17 plus years in the industry, she's now helping entrepreneurs understand why audio branding could be their secret weapon for explosive growth.
The sound that they put on this visual is just as important as the visual.
If not more.
You get the information from the visuals, you get the heart from the audio. The minute I hear an AI voice, I know that anything else, they have put no thought into anything that's going on now. Like I said, I'm not upset that AI exists. I think it's great for productivity. It's not good for connectivity. So it helps us produce. It helps enhance what we already have produced, but it doesn't connect us with one another.
How did you get into voice acting? Why did you decide to start your own podcast? What are your thoughts on people that are doing AI podcasts? What are the benefits that podcasting gives to you?
For me, it's the relationships that I get with the guests that I have on the show.
You are running a successful podcast. You are doing it for how many years?
Over 5 years now. We're coming up on 300 episodes.
I think you never skipped an episode.
What helps me do that is...
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Pod Files. Thank you so much for joining. And today we are going to talk to Jody Krangle. And this is going to be an interesting one because the first time I met Jody was on her own podcast, on Audio Branding Podcast. And it was an amazing experience. It's actually one of the best hosts I ever met because she really has a process on how to onboard you and everything. And I even got a gift from her and I'm still using that mug every day. While I'm editing and all that, and it says audio branding and all that. There you go. It was great. And now I wanted to give her the stage to talk about audio branding and the voiceover profession. And she's also a podcast host, obviously. So she has a lot to teach us about voiceover acting, podcast hosting, audio branding and everything. So there's going to be a lot of topics today, and I'm pretty sure you're going to enjoy this one. So Jody, welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm doing very good, Bogdan. How are you?
I'm good. I would have loved to have you here in the studio physically because I think those podcasts are a little bit more dynamic, but I'm trying my best to do this with the remote interviews as well. But first thing first, tell us a little bit more about you, where you're located exactly, and what do you do for your clients and what do you do every day basically in audio?
Well, I am based in Toronto, Canada, so north of Toronto, actually, a little bit, but and kind of grateful for that. I'm a suburb girl.
Right, good.
I am a voice actor. That's what I've been doing since 2007, full time. So I provide brand voice and corporate narrations and podcast intros and outros and really anything that people like that's 5 minutes of finished audio or less. That's kind of my wheelhouse. Mostly in the areas of commercials and advertising, marketing, branding, that kind of thing, which is why I started talking about audio branding. And I work a lot in tech, in healthcare, and in financial. My voice lends itself to certain types of brands and certain industries, and I'm aware of that. And the market has told me where I belong.
Right. Always, yeah. The market shifts everything, right?
The market will tell you, exactly. Yeah.
Well, that's great. That's awesome. So how did you get into voice acting to start with?
Well, in 1995, 96, I volunteered my time at the CNIB, which is the Canadian National Institute for the Blind. And I was reading magazine articles onto reel-to-reel tape at the time. And it was a while back. and I really liked the voicing, but I also liked the tech. So I wasn't intimidated by that tech, which told me that maybe this was something that I could make a living at, because really, even by then, you kind of needed to run your own stuff. Not everything would be done in a studio. I didn't really know what voiceover was until probably like quite a bit later. It kind of percolated in the back of my head for a while, and I was in SEO and internet marketing up until 2007, basically. Started in 95, went to 2007, got really bored when Google became the only thing that was worth promoting to. Yeah. That was just so boring to me.
Why? I find that fascinating, to be honest. Even though it's one platform, to me, like getting discovered on Google, it's harder and harder, and the struggle of doing that to me is kind of like a challenge. So I love a challenge.
It used to be more of an art and a science, though. And now, I mean, content is everything. Also, you're getting into the realm of AI being the search engine. So Google is even not as important as it used to be. And and that's weird to me, but honestly, I don't care anymore. It's not my wheelhouse anymore.
Good.
And I'm happy to leave it to someone else.
Good.
But yeah, right in the beginning of the internet, I was on there promoting a songwriting website, actually. I had a songwriting resource called The Muse's Muse back in 95. It lasted until 2016. And by then, my voiceover career was way, way too much time to be able to handle that website as well. And unless I was going to make it a huge, big social media empire, it wasn't going to go anywhere. It was just one big resource. I mean, it had a message board. It had a radio show. It had all sorts of articles that were coming on a regular basis. It was pretty big. But I wasn't at that point songwriting anymore. I was facilitating for other people. So it became more of a, how much am I going to put into getting other people what they need and putting my own needs to the wayside? And I couldn't juggle things anymore. It was my baby for a long time. But while I was running that, I needed to know how to promote it, and I had no money to promote it.
Yes.
So I learned how to promote it by getting regular listings on Google, by, you know, just the regular organic listings on Google, and making sure that it was up there and, you know, when people were looking. And I started selling my services doing that for other people. So that was how I promoted my own stuff for a while. And then in 2007, like I said, I got really bored and I was like, okay, maybe this thing in the background that I've been thinking about, maybe I should just do that. And I put up a website because I knew about websites. And away I go. But, you know, I had a lot of things to learn before I was really before I was good at what I could do. Because I had to learn that it was actually acting. That's the thing. Like, you may be able to speak, and you may be able to speak well, but can you speak someone else's script so that it sounds like it's your own?
Got you. Yeah, that's important.
And it is acting. That is acting. It's having a dialogue with someone. So no matter what script you have, someone asked you a question and you're answering that question.
Mm-hmm. So did you study in this field at all, in voice acting or acting in general?
I didn't really take any straight acting, but I have had multiple sessions of coaching with all sorts of different coaches, and I still do it to this day. In fact, I think May 8th was the last time I participated in a coaching session. So, I mean, I still do this, you know, 17, 18 years later, I'm still coaching. And I think that's good, because the minute you stop and think that you know it all, you're dead in the water. That's it.
100%. Why did you decide to start your own podcast? Because this show is about, you know, people starting podcasts or starting like some sort of content marketing. And I would like to see what brought you to this idea of, I want to start an audio branding show, right? So when did that light switch on?
Well, it didn't necessarily switch on specifically to audio branding until a bit later. Mm-hmm. I was in a business mastermind, and a lot of the people in the business mastermind were starting podcasts. And this was 2018, I think. And I'd been in that mastermind for a little bit and was watching everyone's progress and stuff like that. I had fought it for so long, and I fought it because I'd already done the whole creating a resource for other people route. Like, my songwriting resource was, it took a huge amount of my time. It had a newsletter. It had all sorts of other promotional things. It was I mean, and it was really for everyone else but me. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Because by that time, like 2 years in, I probably wasn't really writing songs anymore, sort of, you know, but like I was facilitating for everyone else. And it was fun. I learned a lot administration-wise, really enjoyed that part of it. And I loved getting to know the internet better. That was a playground for me, and I really enjoyed that. But I, you know, at some point, I just had to, and it wasn't making money. So at some point, I had to go, well, okay, this is taking a lot of my time. I'm not getting paid for it. You know, it's nice to get some recognition and for people to understand that I'm helping them, but like, I need to make a living. I need to keep a roof over my head. Like, this is not helping me. and so I kept doing it for as long as I possibly could. And the way that I kept doing that, the tenacity it took to keep on doing that, I wasn't as excited about starting that kind of thing all over again. And I knew inherently how much work a podcast was going to be. So I didn't want to commit to it until I was certain that I could actually find out what my passion was. And my passion that continued to be my passion, that I didn't lose passion for after I started it.
Good. Yeah, that
which
could
is,
happen.
That's the trick, and it can totally happen. And that is totally what happened with the songwriting website. Mm-hmm. So I know how that can go. But when I first started to experiment with podcasts, I actually made something called Jody's Silver Linings, which was, I had no idea what I was going to do. Mm-hmm. This was like it was 30 episodes, and it was all about self-care for creatives. That was its byline.
Okay, love that.
And, you know, it was just sort of things that were common sense, I thought, because I was a little older and, you know, I wasn't as enamored of taking photos of everything that I ate and every little thing that happened because I wanted to experience that moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just giving people permission to not have to be productive every second of the day.
Well, that's a change.
Yeah. I mean, one of those, like, you know, mind-blowing kind of things that lots of people didn't really understand or want to understand. For me, my peace is really important for me to be able to continue and do something productive later. So if I don't have a moment of peace, I can't come from a full cup. Do you know what I mean? Like, I can't.
Jody, question here. If you would stop now for 3 days, would anything bad happen to you?
If I stop?
Yeah, 3 days.
I mean, it would depend on how completely you needed me to stop.
Completely. Like you would go somewhere in a forest and you have no access to internet. Would you be able to, would everything around you be able to function?
I mean,
will you lose
my
some...
business would probably go by the wayside a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I don't really have anyone else to answer email but me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of by design.
Yeah.
I do that on purpose.
Good.
Because I like to be involved in that. Mm-hmm. I don't want anyone else answering emails for me. That's pretty personal. You know, if I had access to my email and that was it, I could probably run my whole business.
Okay,
and
cool.
Nothing would you know, nothing bad would happen.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't mean I have to do the thing immediately as soon as I get that email, but just being able to communicate with people and let them know I'm not going to be available for a few days, you know. I could even technically set an away message on my email and it would probably be okay.
Well, that's the problem in nowadays.
It is a problem.
The way we live today is crazy. Especially for the people that run their own businesses or they're sole traders. If you do stuff for yourself, you always aspire for something more and something more and never stops, right? Because you can.
Yeah, it's true.
You can, right? When you work for, let's say, a corporation, another business, you have a 9-to-5, you go to work and then you come back and that's it, right? It's nothing it's not exciting, but it's stable.
Yeah, you can leave it at work.
Yeah. So,
but
you said that you started this concept. It wasn't audio branding just yet, right?
So it wasn't. No.
So how did you get into audio branding from there?
Well, I got to a point where people were asking me to be a life coach.
Wow.
So from this kind of gave me the hint that when you create a podcast, people think you are an expert in that field.
Well, that's a new thing.
That's what happens, right?
Right.
So like, yeah, when mm-hmm. you put out a podcast and you talk about something on a regular basis, they start to think that you know what you're talking about.
Correct. Well, you're an expert in the field because you're talking with so many experts, right? So well, you could say...
I mean, I'm still learning, right? Mm. So what happened for me was I realized that what success for that podcast meant for me wasn't something I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, what that said was, this is not the topic I should be talking about.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool.
that was the hint it gave me.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I was like, well, what do I have a passion for?
Mm-hmm.
What do I really care about? What makes me want to get up in the morning and be excited about my life? And audio and the power of sound and how it influences us, that's what gets me up in the morning. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that's the most amazing thing to talk about. And 5+ years later, I'm still talking about it. But I decided to name it audio branding because at the time, audio branding, sonic branding was still fairly new in the North American market. And I mean, Europe has been doing it for years, but, you know, it was sort of something that was not really thought about. And because I'm a voice actor, because I'm lending my voice to an audio brand on a daily basis, I wanted the people that I work with and the people those people work with to be able to explain why the sound that they put on this visual is just as important as the visual.
If not more.
Well, I mean, I've been talking about this for a long time, and the way that I put it is that you get the information from the visuals, you get the heart from the audio, you get the heart from the sound.
I can talk in my microphone here,
yep.
And now I can talk here. Now nobody can hear me. Nothing. It's so strange. It sounds bad, right?
Yeah,
and
yeah.
People, like, my video is crisp. It's really good, right? But mm-hmm. if the audio is really bad, then obviously stuff starts to fall. It's not...
People will tune out.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's one of those things where you get your emotional cues from the audio, from the sound.
Mm-hmm.
Like, turn off the sound on a movie. And okay, I hate horror movies.
I hate them. Say that, yeah.
I cannot watch them. I find it really, really hard because the sound influences how I am supposed to experience that jump scare or that gore or whatever it is. I don't care for it. It's not my thing. But if someone turns off the sound on one of those movies, I can watch it, no problem. Doesn't really give me anything. It doesn't bother me, but okay. But because all of the emotional context has been leached out of it, it no longer scares me.
About the horror movies, that's quite interesting because I experienced that one time when there was a horror movie. We were watching a horror movie and nobody was really scared, if that makes sense. And it felt like, it's okay. It's not too bad. And then I started turning the volume up and it was like really loud and suddenly everything started to become so much scarier just because all the background noise and all that stuff, it's preparing you to be scared. And it's creating in such a way that is going to influence your emotions and everything. I think mm-hmm. especially on horror movies, sound design is so important, but obviously in other types of movies. And because I actually worked a little bit on sound design at my university while I was studying music production, I had a course that was sound design and I had to create the entire scene of Avatar, one of the scenes with running through the forest and everything. And it was important what type of music you put in there. Because if you put some calm music, like really relaxing music, you know, it will not fit the narrative and stuff like that. So it's really important to get that right.
Yeah, it definitely is. It gives you the cues. So yeah, it's super important. And I think it's just as important in advertising. I don't think a lot of advertisers get that either. Unfortunately, or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, right now, visual advertising is the creation of little mini movies. It really is, because otherwise it's not going to hold our attention.
Mm-hmm.
And we are inundated, like, advertising, marketing, branding, it's everywhere. There's so much, I say noise, but really it's clutter. Mm-hmm. It just becomes a bunch of clutter. And if you're not putting out a really good product that has the whole package, that is a mini movie in and of itself, with sound design, with good voiceover, with awesome visuals, all of them work together to create a piece that is going to command attention. And if you can't command attention now, you're going to be lost in a sea of average. And that's what happens, unfortunately, with AI, because when you start getting into the whole AI thing, the minute I hear an AI voice, I know that anything else, they have put no thought into anything that's going on now. Mm-hmm. And I see a ton of those on YouTube now as pre-rolls.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're selling the latest scam, whatever it is, but it
especially
sounds
on advertising,
like a scam.
Especially on advertising, yeah, it sounds mm-hmm. it sounds bad, and it sounds like a scam, like you said. And I've seen that over and over, especially on social media.
They're taking the visuals too, though. Like, have you seen this? Because I've seen like the videos where there's a person there.
Mm-hmm.
I know it's AI because their mouth is moving, but their eyes are not.
Yeah. Yes.
That's how I can tell. Yep. It's an AI person they created. It may be a real person. And there are words coming out of that person's mouth that they would probably never say.
Mm-hmm. I've seen that a lot.
And their eyes are not moving at all. Like their cheeks, like nothing. There's no facial expression that's mirroring what they're saying. And it's really disconcerting, first of all. And such a scam. You know it's a scam.
It's a scam, and it's also it feels very dystopian to me, honestly. That's the word I would use. Well, AI, I find AI sometimes useful if you use it as a creative choice, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Obviously, the budget is different as well in many cases.
I mean, yeah. And I understand that some people are going to use it, and those people are likely never going to have reached out to me in the first place. So it's not jobs that I've lost. It's just jobs I never had.
Coca-Cola or Pepsi or like really big brands would.
Yeah.
Would
well,
not,
they have to they have to be very, any business that wants to make a connection with their audience needs to be very conscious of the fact that they use real human voices, because we need to connect to human beings. If you use an AI voice, that AI voice has nothing behind it. You're reaching other AI. If you want to reach a connection with a human being.
What are your thoughts on people that are doing AI podcasts? That to me sounds so ridiculous.
Yeah, I can't see the point of that. I really can't. The only thing that I really like is when people use it in a creative way. Have you seen The Baby and the Dog?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
That's fun.
So that is a creative way for someone who writes a really funny script mm-hmm. to be able to make an AI podcast that is worth listening to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
See, I thought that was brilliant.
Yes.
And now everybody's copying it, right?
But, yeah,
you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, but that was brilliant. That's a fun use of it. And I'm not saying AI is always bad. I'm not saying that. It's great for productivity. It really helps us not stare at that white page, you mm-hmm. know? It gives us ideas. We could even go in the total opposite direction that the idea it gives us.
Correct.
In fact, when it comes up with ideas, and I've heard this from some advertising execs, they go and do the complete opposite thing, because whatever it came up with is the middle of the road thing that is expected that they got from an amalgamation of all the data.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you want to be different, you have to go in a completely different direction. But at least you know where the middle is.
Correct. It's almost like, a GPS system, the navigation on your car. Because I just experienced this today. I was driving down the road and the road was closed. So now what I had to do is go where the robot doesn't tell me to go. right? Because the road is closed, right? So the GPS would tell me, go that way, because it's fine. But all the signs and everything was showing me like, no, it's closed, road works, everything. So I turned the car around, and then the GPS obviously would keep trying to tell me like, no, you need to do a U-turn. You need to do a U-turn. And I had to go far away until the GPS actually said, you know what? Go forward 2 miles ahead and then go there. And then it started to reshape. So I think AI sometimes is doing that as well, where it tells you to go one way. It doesn't know the context of what you're trying to achieve exactly. You need to give it a lot of prompts in order for it to understand exactly what you're trying to do. Yeah, it's good for tedious tasks sometimes or anything like that, or like come up with some ideas to spark some creation or analyze huge amounts of data.
Yeah.
It's interesting time we live in. We should see it as an opportunity, but at the same time, it's shaping the internet in a way in which I don't like. So if I go now on Google, I will, let's say I land on an article, I can straight tell instantly that it's AI generated. What's the value of that article to me? Right?
Yeah, very little.
Yeah.
Yeah. Human creativity is something that I value and still value.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that, I think that AI is something that we can use creatively, but it needs to be used by us, not replacing creativity, if that makes 100%. Any sense. Like, for instance, the baby and the dog podcast interview is a creative way of using AI that never would have worked unless you had that opportunity to use it, right? And I love how creative that was. But it was a showcase then for a humorous writer to showcase their work, right?
Mm-hmm.
So whoever's making that is a fantastic comedian.
Got you.
Right?
Yeah.
So it showcases different things, which I think is awesome. There are many, many different ways to use this that can be beneficial for humans. It's just when we try to use it, like, I don't know what that program is called where you can write a song and then press a button and say, I want it sung in the style of, and in 5 minutes it has a song for you.
I've seen that.
Well, I mean, okay, it doesn't do horrible. Like, actually, it's better than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
But that's not human creativity.
It doesn't connect to me in any way. Because you hear that music and it's like no connection whatsoever. And definitely it's not going to get on radio. Maybe one AI song will get there at some point, but honestly, there's so much effort in. And I remember while I was producing music for myself and I was talking with producers, we would think over every single nuance of that song, from the hi-hat to the pads to the guitar, the way it would play, like everything would be so engineered and so well prepared that there's no room for getting it wrong, because then the record label would say, I don't really like that because it's not really catching me or anything like that. AI music is just some fluff. It just sounds like fluff, right? So it's just some, you could have it maybe as a music bed in the back of something, but still, is that really providing the right support for whatever you're doing, you know?
This is interesting, though. I was just speaking with a friend of mine who is using AI in order to take the tapes that he made 20 years ago.
Restore.
Clean up things, and then maybe add an instrument or two here and there in certain spots. And that's a brilliant use of it.
Of course.
Like, I that's perfect. That's really what it's made for, you know, to take what we already have and enhance it. That's human creativity right at its peak.
And restoration is really, really good. It wasn't possible until recently to take a really bad recording, and you can use Adobe Enhance. Probably you're familiar with that. If you're not...
Yeah, you can use it for podcasts too.
Yeah, so Adobe Enhance, you can upload the recording there, which is like, let's say, a laptop recording, and it gives you a fairly clean recording. It still may have loads of errors here and there. Sometimes I need to cut words entirely because the AI interprets that voice in such a weird way and it shapes the voice in a weird way. But at least there's some sort of solution if worst case happens. You can definitely use that to restore the audio, which it was even with Isotope Rex, right? Very good software for restoration and everything. It cannot do what that does. It's a one push button, right? One press of a button and it does whatever the result is. That's it. You cannot shape much about it. But at least there's another thing you can do to see if you can save a recording, for example. So that's what AI, in a way, gave us in a positive way. So,
and it's a great thing. You know, I'm not upset that AI exists. I do think it has its place. I've also said this before. I think it's great for productivity. It's not good for connectivity. So it helps us produce. It helps enhance what we already have produced, but it doesn't connect us with one another. Unless you're using it the way the Baby and the Dog podcast is using
it. In a creative way.
For extra creativity to make your imagined thing a reality, which I think is a great use of it.
Yeah. I've seen all sorts of crazy stuff using AI. So that's pretty cool. Before we dive back into the episode, I want to give a quick shout out to SaaSPod. Not only are they the masterminds behind this podcast, but they also power dozens of other shows you know and love. SaaSPod offers a flexible pay-as-you-go podcast production service that grows with you. Whether you need help choosing the right equipment, booking guests, editing, or setting up your podcast, they've got you covered. The best part? The team at SaaSPod isn't just professional. They make the entire process fun and stress-free. If you've been sitting on a great podcast idea, now is the time to bring it to life. Visit SaaSPod.com and use the code TPF2025 to get 20% off your first production package. That's TPF2025 for 20% off. All right, let's get back into the episode. You are running a successful podcast. You are doing it for how many years?
I started it in November of 2019. So it's over 5 years now. We're coming up on 300 episodes.
Amazing. So let's celebrate that, right? So 300 episodes is a lot of episodes. So, and from my discussion with you, I think you never skipped an episode. There was no scenario like that?
No, I have not. No. What helps me do that is that when I have an hour-long episode, I split it into two parts. Mm-hmm. So one interview will last for 2 weeks, which really helps as far as buffering is concerned.
Mm-hmm. And you also are quite ahead with the episodes as well, from what I understand. So that's also good. Because I remember when we recorded our episode, it came out maybe 1 month or 2 months later. Or something like that.
Yeah, it might have been almost three or four.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about that right now. Yeah. Because we have interviews already in the can that need to be edited. And then I'm usually about 4 to 6 weeks ahead.
Mm-hmm. From a productivity perspective, I want to educate my clients to do the same. Obviously, not every podcast would be able to do this because some people want, you know, the episodes to come up, you know, quite quick because the topic is maybe relevant within that time.
And all of my podcast episodes are evergreen, so they could come out really at any time. Good. I think you'll probably know when they came out because we're talking a lot about the pandemic or we're talking a lot about AI.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, you'll have an idea of when they came out, but there's nothing in them that says you can't listen to this 5 years later and still get something from it.
What are the benefits that podcasting gives to you?
For me, it's the relationships that I get with the guests that I have on the show. That's really why I have this, because I want to raise all boats for all of us who work in sound. That is really my upper level reason for having this, right? And to let people know how important voiceover can be in their end product as well. That, of course, is important to my job, right? But also, I want to give the agency people and the people that I have on my podcast the ability to explain to the people they work with why it's important. So that's important as well, giving them fodder to explain why what they do is important to their end clients. And the relationships that I get, that I foster with the people who are on the podcast are wonderful. It's great to get to know people better, maybe that I've already worked with or that I may work with in the future. I know, for instance, when I had Cornelius Ringa on the podcast, he works with a company called WeSound in Germany, and he also runs the International Sound Awards.
Wow.
So I've become a judge on the International Sound Awards.
That's so
I've been
cool.
doing it. This will be the third year now. I love it. It's such a great reason to have an awards show.
How can you compete into that?
How can you get into it?
Yeah.
I've been posting about it on social media for a while now. I think this year, the deadline has passed. But usually the deadline ends around like late May, late-ish May, like the 20s in May. Yeah, anyone can submit anything that they feel that they've participated in, done, that made the world sound better.
I love that. That's so good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, it could be advertising, it could be an app, it could be an initiative that they did that was live. Like, I think one time we had a company that would go around with, they were like trucks. Basically, they were like movable trucks that had sound in them for people to have roving concerts and stuff like that.
Wow, that's so unique.
And it was just, and everything was in the truck. Uh-huh. Like it was a big back end and you'd open up the cargo area, I guess, and everything would be in that area so that you could have a concert impromptu wherever you parked the truck. Like it was just such a great idea. You know, initiatives like museum tours and stuff like that, that are specifically focusing on how people experience the sound as they walk through, and all sorts of things, apartment buildings or places where the sound is really thought out, hospitals. Mm-hmm. 1 year, I think a children's hospital won for the soundscapes that they had in that hospital.
Oh, that's so cool.
So yeah. All sorts of stuff, interesting.
The sound is such an important part of our lives. If you live in a busy city where there's a lot of noise pollution, you won't know how bad of a life you have until you move out from that city. And I experienced that myself. Southampton, where I used to live, I used to live in the city center, and cars were passing by really, really loudly. And people were were drinking on the street, and they would get drunk and they would scream, and it would be a nightmare. I was living very close to a club, and one of my friends, who's a DJ, right? And he's my friend. I call him, man, I'm trying to sleep. It's 2 a.m. in the morning, right? It's Monday already. Bring the music down, right? And he was like raving in the club. So he actually turned the bass down only for me.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Good friend.
He's a good friend. Shout out to Rarish if he sees this podcast. But yeah, he's a DJ and he has done that for me, which is funny. Well, I would go sometimes to the party myself. Obviously, when that happens, I wanted the music to be as loud as possible. So it's biased.
Of course. You got to be careful with your hearing, though.
Yes,
like,
you do.
Wear some earplugs.
Yeah.
That's it's really dangerous.
I will have you choose 2 or 3 random questions, depending on how long the answers are, from my mystery box, right? So I've got this mystery box. They have nothing to do with audio, podcasting, anything.
Okay.
They are just random questions.
And I'm game.
I want to see what your answer is going to be. So
okay.
Are you ready for me to choose for you? Because obviously we cannot do this through the computer.
Yes. So totally fine. Go ahead.
I'll choose this one. So let's see. Yeah, this is an interesting one. And what one part of this game, which I like, is that sometimes I choose the same questions, but people have different answers to them. And it's quite interesting to see where we go. So if you had a time machine but could only use it once, would you go to the past or the future, and why?
If I could only use it once.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. I would probably go to the future.
But you might need to stay there, though.
Okay.
To the future.
I'm just more interested in the future, to be honest.
What year would you want to go to?
Oh, probably at least 100 years further than this.
What do you think would happen then?
Ugh, I'm hoping it's not a black nothingness. But I would hope that in 100, 200 years that we've resolved some things.
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know, maybe there are actually flying cars. You know, maybe this AI thing has settled down and we've figured out how to use it to our advantage. And maybe it's as helpful as it has the potential to be. Mm-hmm. And, you know, maybe we've gotten rid of this whole money thing and we're like, I love Star Trek. Like, you know,
I wanted to say that in Star Trek, they have no money anymore.
Yeah.
So I reference Star Trek quite a lot because Star Trek is such a good show.
Well, it had so much heart and it had so many wishes for our good potential,
mm-hmm.
which I think I like to be optimistic. I would rather be optimistic than pessimistic.
Yeah, so me too.
I wanted to see the better of what the future would bring.
Mm, maybe we're going to get something that I'm excited about if it happens in 100 years is the replicator.
Oh, yeah.
So getting food... Any type of food replicator. Any type of food. I'm just going to order pizza.
Yeah. The only one issue I would have with that is what is it making the food out of?
From particles and stuff. So atoms coming together. I'm not sure exactly how is that done, but well.
I would want to know what it's making it out of. If it was just particles from the air, then sure. But if it's like got to have some kind of like paste of some kind to make it into something, I want to know what's in that paste.
Spock will figure it out.
I know. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
I'm way overanalyzing this.
Right. 100 years in the future. Well, I love that. I love that answer. I would probably go to the future as well. Going in the past doesn't sound appealing to me.
I know what happened.
And you know what happened, roughly at least, right?
Yeah,
and
roughly.
And you know that people had a really, really bad life. It wasn't fun.
Yeah.
At all.
And I wouldn't change anything about my own life either. Mm-hmm. There's not anything that I would go back to change because I am who I am because of what happened in the past.
Me too.
I love that. I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Next one.
Mm-hmm.
You enjoy this?
Sure.
So let's have a look. Well, this one, for whatever reason, this question always comes up. I have it only once in this box, but almost every episode it comes up. So what's the strangest thing you ever Googled?
The strangest thing I ever Googled? God, can I even remember? I don't even know how to answer that, mm-hmm. honestly. I mean, I think we all have really weird stuff that we just want to know, well, why does this happen? Or mm-hmm. what is this about? Mm-hmm. Or seriously, I can't even remember. It probably was a definition of a word or something that I heard someone speak. Mm. And I wanted to know what context it was usually used in.
Or maybe what was the strangest thing you used AI for? Because sometimes you can ask AI certain stupid questions and you can see what it's going to answer. I actually asked AI once, like something, I'll tell you a story. It will save the question. So you know that on ChatGPT, you can go and you can ask certain things, but at some point you're going to hit a certain credit limit. If you have the free version, it's going to tell you like you need to buy the next package or something.
I have never hit that limit.
I hit it because I gave it a huge amount of data to process some keywords for SEO purposes. And then he said, I cannot do that. You need to buy the premium account and whatever. And I told it, listen, if you give me this answer, I'm going to buy the package. But you need to give me this answer first as a demo. He actually gave me the answer.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Did you buy it?
Of course not.
So you taught AI that we're liars.
I didn't taught AI that we're liars. What I made sure that I'm negotiating my way through it. And AI believed me. So it's not smart enough for a salesperson to understand that I'm just actually trying to get something for free. So that's fun.
Yeah, but you trick it once. I don't think you'll be able to do it again.
Do you think so? I think I could.
I don't know. I'd like to see.
I'll try. I'll let you know if that happens. So
okay.
Awesome. So one more question and that's it.
Sure.
Boom. Yeah, I think you're going to like this one. If you could instantly master one skill unrelated to your career, what would that be?
Oh, drawing. Artistry.
Drawing?
Yeah.
I like that.
Being an artist. Mm. Yeah.
I would like to.
Yeah, I always wanted to. I suck at it. But I always wanted to. I got the musical end of things, which I'm very happy with and don't have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. You know, it's either that or piano playing.
Right. Piano playing, you'll love that.
Yeah, because I'm a singer and I've been a singer since I was six, but I've never really known how to accompany myself on an instrument. So like piano or guitar or something like that, like I don't really have another instrument. So if I could just like instantly learn something, maybe guitar, maybe piano, something like that, something that would accompany, that would be great.
If you want to learn art, if you want to learn how to draw, one of my new clients, Christine Art, that's her YouTube. Go and check her out. She's really good at that stuff. What was your most significant professional success so far in audio?
That is a good question. You know, I a lot of what I do is what I call unsexy. So a lot of what I do is internal presentations, corporate narration, things that don't see the light of day, you know, a lot of it. So, and I love it anyway. You know, they need a voice for that too. But, you know, I've done broadcast for Dell. I've done TV narration for a spinoff of the Property Brothers called Buying and Selling. Mm-hmm. That was back in like 2011. I've done some documentary work. You know, I love the commercials though. The commercials are my lifeblood. And that's again, why I talk about audio branding, because it's so important. And yeah, I love the psychology behind it. But yeah, probably the most successful thing that people would recognize would be the year and a half that I did TV narration for Buying and Selling.
What's your favorite Sonic logo? Do you have a favorite one? I do have.
That's a good question. I don't know if I have a... Well, okay. I kind of love the Netflix.
Netflix
the
one.
The ba-dum.
Ba-bum.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
I kind of love it. And I love it because it sets you up to be excited about what comes next.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
That's the sound that I... That's the feeling. That's ba-bum. The emotion I get from it.
I love it.
This big thing that you're going to witness now. Mm-hmm. Here you go.
Exactly.
Right? Like, I love that. I love that. I really like the McDonald's logo also because of how it came to be.
What's the story behind
that? Yeah. So it was originally a Justin Timberlake song.
It sounds like a Justin Timberlake song if you think about it.
Way back, it was a Justin Timberlake song, and that was the chorus. Right? The I'm loving it part was the chorus. So they had him sing it for like a year, and then they commissioned someone else to be a sound alike, or they made like an offshoot of the, like it was still the same song, but someone else was singing it. So they didn't have to pay him licensing fees, right? Okay. And then it got distilled down to only the chorus. Mm-hmm. And then from there, the mnemonic that came from the chorus. Mm-hmm. So it kind of developed over time into what it is now. So that da-da-da-da-da, like that is, and you can make that sound so many different ways depending on what tempo you use, what sound, what instruments you use, what song it's in the middle of. Like, you know, you can add jingle bells on it and make it, you know, like a holiday commercial.
It's an iconic one.
You know, all sorts of different ways. It's just so versatile. So I love it.
I'll tell you my favorite one.
Yeah.
So, you know, the one from Microsoft.
Yeah.
And it was back in the 90s or 2000 where.
Yes.
That one brings so much memory to me. And it's so how I wanted to see technology always, right?
Yeah.
It's
it made that excitement for you.
It made that excitement. It gives you that. Here is your computer. He's the universe, right? He is another universe you can explore. That's how I felt about that Sonic logo. And it's one of my favorite ones, to be honest.
Yeah. No, I agree. I'm a PC user from way back. I had a computer in 86.
Yeah, because I have here a question that wants to explore. I want to explore a little bit your nerdy
side. Yeah. Okay, yeah. I'm a giant nerd.
Yeah, I saw that on the bio.
Yeah.
Good. Good. So if you like Star Trek, definitely you are. Like myself as well.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
One mistake from which you learned the valuable lesson.
Well, when I first got into voiceover, I thought I knew everything, which was, you know, big mistake number one. I got my first demos done at what they call a demo mill. And they call it a demo mill because basically they'll take your credit card, they take anyone's credit card, and they produce something for you, but they give you no instruction. So what I produced was me sounding pretty, but absolutely making no connection to what I was talking about in a very nicely produced demo. Right?
Nice.
So it sounded awful. And when I started, this was back in 2008, when I put it on the message boards and said, hey, look at this. You know, isn't it great? You know, I'm ready. You know, they all listened to it and went, no, actually, you're not. And this sucks. And here's why.
At least you got the feedback, which is good.
I got the feedback. Oh, yeah. Message boards were a very good thing to have back before the social media took over. Mm-hmm. So this was before Facebook, right? So... when I went on there, the person who was the loudest criticizer was the person that I asked, what do I do? Okay, so I spent all this money now. I have nothing. Mm-hmm. What do I do? I'm dead in the water now. Like, what else do I do? And he took me under his wing and told me how to act. That, you know, shared with me that it was actually an acting job, not just a speaking job. And, you know, from that mistake, I learned how to actually look at this, that it is actually an acting job. And it took some time. It wasn't like I learned overnight.
Got you. Very interesting. Have you ever had the opportunity to do voiceover acting for something you disagreed with?
Not really. And I will say that pretty instinctually, I know what I feel like I can do and what I feel like I can't. And it takes a lot to get me there. It really does. Like, you know, I can usually come up with an idea of, well, I mean, this person thinks of it this way, and it's a business, and I'm a business, and I may not buy that product or service or whatever, but it may be really good for someone who needs it. So I can usually get past stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But there are certain things that I just don't do. I don't tend to talk about politics or religion.
Mm-hmm.
Those are two things that I sort of try to keep out of that make me a little... I mean, I've done some political stuff, but I have to be really careful about where I align. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard for me to do something that I'm not aligned with.
Of course. And it's also your voice is personal. It's your voice. It's unique, right? It's coming from your body. So if you align that thing with something you don't really believe in.
Yeah, it can be hard to get the voice into the right place. But at the same time, I'm not thinking of it as, in general, if it's like a big thing that a lot of people are going to hear, then yeah, I want to be very careful about what I put my voice on. But at the same time, it's not about me. I'm the voice under. I'm not the voice over. I shouldn't be the focus. That's not what I'm there to do. I'm there to enhance, right? So it just depends on the project. But yeah, there are some things that I will just say no to. I don't think I've done anything that I'm really embarrassed about, is what I'm saying.
That's good. That's what
because I knew in my gut that I would be embarrassed by it before I decided to take the job.
And it's not worth it, honestly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Good. Right. So that was an interesting one. And we explored quite a few topics and ideas. Do you have a question for me before we stop? Sometimes I ask that to my guests.
Well, you know, I ask all of my guests when they come on the podcast, and I may have asked this of you when you were there, if you have an early memory of how sound moved you.
Yeah, and if you want to listen to my interview on the Audio Branding Podcast, you can go. And obviously, other interviews with great experts, because I listen to a few episodes. I'm not a regular listener, I must say. But
no, that's fine.
But
your music is on every episode after 150, though.
Yeah, I know. So go and listen to that. I answered to that question, I remember, was when I went into one of those rehearsal rooms where I had to go for an audition to be part of a musical group for a band and stuff like that, a vocal band. And there was an older generation of musicians in there playing drums and piano and all that. And he was really, really, really loud. And it was so loud that actually the floor was shaking. And that's when I said, ooh, you know what? This is what I do. This is what I want to do for a living. I like that, right? It was really heavy stuff and it moved me. And I was a kid and the impact is staying in my memory forever. So yeah, I like that. So
how old were you when that happened?
I was 8.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was 8.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for me, that was enough. And it was also a place where the guys were a lot older. They were like in their 20s or something, right? They mm-hmm. were all like very
ancient.
Nah, ancient. Yeah, exactly. They were very rock, right?
To an 8-year-old.
They were very heavy. They were dressing up like, you know, almost like rock stars, if that makes sense. And maybe that had an impact as well. And they were
the
like,
image. Yeah.
It looked like they were enjoying that so much. And yeah, I remember, yeah, I said, wow, this is so cool. And even
that's
remember
great.
The smell of that place. It was,
okay.
It was
yes.
very dusty place. It was smelling like yeah. dust all the time because everybody was coming in and out from there. And it would also get very hot in there as well during summertime. So it felt like a place where you can go and you can play music and you can enjoy. And yeah, it was good. It was good. So Jody, thank you so much for being a guest on this podcast. I hope.
Thank you for having
yeah,
me.
Yeah, maybe we're going to get you again. Not maybe. For sure we're going to get you again. Because I want to run this for as long as you run your own show. Hopefully I'm going to have the stamina to do that because it's a lot yeah. of work. And obviously the budget is also quite high for this podcast because I'm having the video podcast and audio podcast and everything. So
yeah,
but thank you. Thank you again for coming to the show. And you guys, if you really love this episode, subscribe on YouTube. That's really, really important. Leave a comment. Maybe Jody will engage with you in the comments. If you have any questions about audio branding or anything like that, go and visit Jody's website. Can you cue your website and where can people find you really quickly?
Sure. It's voiceoversandvocals.com. And you'll find information on the podcast there too.
Go to her website and have a look around. And guys, if you love this video, obviously you can like it as well, share it. And on the audio podcast, because we have an audio podcast version as well, go and leave a review there on Apple especially. This really helps the algorithm to show my podcast up on that network. So thank you guys for joining and I'll see you next time. Bye.